Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday. Aloydia Pena Lawley Hernandez, 76, of Odessa, passed away Friday, August 27th at her home. Aloydia was born May 27, 1945, in Fort Stockton, to Domingo and Dominga Pena. Aloydia was preceded in death by her husband, Samuel D. Hernandez, and parents. She is survived by two sons, Samuel Hernandez, Jr. of Odessa, and Stephen Hernandez and wife Virginia of Odessa, eight grandchildren, four adopted grandchildren, and 13 great-grandchildren, brothers and sisters Bertha Pena, Natalie Reshman, Mary Alice Murillo, and husband Gilbert, Mary Dolores Pena Zavala and husband Rudy, Josie Bayless and husband Chris, Raul Rubio and wife Rosalinda Rubio, and Noe Pena. A mass of Christian burial will be celebrated on Friday, September 3rd at 10 a.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Manton Ray Butch Dodson, Jr. passed from this life on Monday, August 23rd at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa at the age of 67. He was born Wednesday, September 9th, 1953, to the late Manton Sr. and Bernice Hibbets Dodson. Those left to cherish his love and memory include his daughter Lainey Kidd and her husband Kevin, son Manton Ray Matt Dodson III, two grandsons, brothers Gary Canny and Randy Dodson, sisters Gay Helton, Bertie Hickey, and Nella Wilkerson, and many nieces, nephews, and extended family members. His wife, Linda Dodson, his parents, sister LaDonna Hamilton and daughter Lacey Nicole Dodson, preceded him in death. Graveside services will be at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery on Friday, September 3rd at 10 a.m. Pastor John Hendricks will officiate. Condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Jacob Storm Lowry, 30, of Crane, died unexpectedly on August 26th at Crane Memorial Hospital. He was born July 28, 1991, in Odessa, to Evan and Betty Lowry. Jacob was preceded in death by his mother, Betty Lowry, his grandparents, and few other family members. Jacob is survived by his fiancée, Samantha Milligan, stepdaughter, Brooklyn Milligan, stepson Tanner Milligan, daughter Hensley Lowry, father Evan Lowry, brother Cord Lowry, sister-in-law Carrie Ann Lowry, his nephews, numerous aunts, uncles, cousins as well. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 2nd at the First Baptist Church in Crane. Arrangements are under the care of Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home. Anton Albert Frisky, age 77, of Odessa, passed away peacefully on August 26th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Anton was born in Knox City, Texas, to Lawrence and Martha Frisky on September 3rd, 1943. Anton is preceded in death by his parents, Lawrence and Martha, and his greatly missed grandson, Zach Frisky. He is survived by his beloved wife of 57 years, Diana, of Odessa, his daughter Cindy Osborne and husband Ronnie of Odessa, son Lee Frisky and wife Lisa of Odessa, brother Robert Frisky of Sundown, Texas, sister Rosalie Buchanan of Santa Fe, Texas, and his grandchildren. Visitation will be on Wednesday, September 1st from 6 to 8 p.m., at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa. Funeral services will be held Thursday, September 2nd at 10 a.m. with Father Mark Woodruff of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Stephen N. Cortez, 50, died Sunday, August 29th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Catherine Jean, Kathy, Harris, 62, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 19th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Saturday, September 4th, at Faith Community Baptist Church in Odessa. Brother Wayne Shelton is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Salvador Natividad, 81, of Odessa, died Monday, August 23rd in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated Friday at 1 p.m., September 3rd, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. George G. Rodriguez, Sr., 71, of Odessa, died Friday, August 27th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m., September 3rd, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Mark Woodruff is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hi, it's Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 31st, 2021, Education section. MISD cases approach 1,200. Midland ISD reported on its website Monday that there have been 1,192 COVID cases involving a student or staff member during the month of August. The total included 325 last week. That was the second most of any week, but a 32% decrease from the week of August 16th. Midland High and Legacy High Schools are the only campuses with more than 100 cases. Able Junior High has reported the most cases of any junior high or freshman school, and Fannin Elementary led the elementary campuses with 44. The total appears to include cases reported early this week. Employee Overcomes Abuse and Homelessness by Rebecca Bell. Claudia Chavez finally owns her own home where she lives with her three children and one grandchild. It's a little tight with that many people living in a small three-bedroom house, but I am so grateful to have a place of my own, Chavez said. However, we still don't have anything hanging on the walls. The reason that Chavez and her family don't have any wall decorations is not because they just moved. It's because after years of being the victim of domestic violence, she is still somewhat apprehensive about having things on walls that can be used as weapons. My ex-husband would throw pictures that were hanging on the wall at me when he went into one of his rages. Those times were so traumatic. For over 7 years, Chavez endured extreme physical abuse by her husband, John. It all started when my oldest daughter, Janisha, was 3. He threw the television remote control at me, and I still have a scar on my forehead from where it hit. The assaults continued and included many instances of verbal and physical abuse. John wouldn't let Claudia see her family and friends. He also made her stay in the house and not go anywhere. I couldn't even answer the door or empty the trash. Occasionally, he would let me go to the grocery store, but I had to show him the receipts when I got home, and he would time me. If I took too long, he would go into one of his rages. On July 31st, 2009, her husband beat her so badly that she had to stay in the hospital for several days. Chavez said that up to that time, she didn't talk to her parents and sisters. I blocked everyone out, she said, partly because my husband wouldn't let me talk to them, but also because I was ashamed of how I was being treated. My sister only lived a few blocks from us, but I never saw her. After Chavez was discharged from the hospital, her family rented a hotel room for her before she and her children were admitted into a women's shelter in Midland. I would have to wear big sunglasses and a scarf around my face because I didn't want people to see how badly I'd been beaten, she said. In September 2009, Chavez and her children relocated to Bryan, mainly to leave Midland, so John couldn't find them. They lived in a women's shelter in Bryan for a short time, and Chavis got a job, which gave her enough money to rent a small home. I wasn't making much salary, but we were coping. My children were going to school, and I was getting counseling. Then one weekend, her parents drove to Bryan for a visit. After they left, there was a knock at her door, and when Chavis answered it, there stood John. He had followed her parents, waited for them to leave, and then once again assaulted Claudia. "I decided to move back to Midland," she said. "I figured if John could find me in Bryan, I might as well be in Midland where I had family." In Midland, Chavis lived in housing assistance provided by Greater Ideal Baptist Church and Buckner Children and Family Services. Then her ex-husband left a note on her car in June 2012 saying he wanted to see the children for Father's Day. I was really stupid and told him that he could see the kids. I'm not sure why I was willing to do that. I guess I felt badly that my children didn't have a father figure in their lives. It was June 17, 2012. When John met the kids and me, he could care less about seeing his children. He dragged me out of the car and beat me so badly that I blacked out. That was the last time I saw him until he was finally arrested, and I appeared in court to testify at his trial. Even with John out of the picture, life was still rough for Claudia and her children. I couldn't find a job, so I started volunteering at Casa de Amigos. The staff there told me about AmeriCorps volunteer program. The program would pay for me to go to college. Chavis enrolled at Midland College and in September 2012 began working at the college as a work-study student. Unfortunately, her housing benefits expired, so she and her three children had to resort to living in her car. We joined the YMCA because I only had to pay $21 per month based on the wages that I was earning at the time. We would shower there, and that's where my kids spent most of their time when they weren't in school. I joined them when I wasn't in school or working. We ate a hot meal on most evenings at Breaking Bread Kitchen. When the YMCA was closed, we spent a lot of time at parks. At night, we parked the car behind Kelview Baptist Church and tried to sleep. Chavis continued her studies at Midland College and graduated with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Business Management. People at Midland College took notice of her strong work ethic, and in February 2014, she was offered a part-time receptionist job in the Human Resources Department. She was then earning enough salary to rent a small apartment. In October 2014, she was hired as a full-time Human Resources receptionist, and in 2019, she was promoted to the position of Secretary to the Human Resources Director. On November 30, 2020, Chavis acquired a house of her own through Habitat for Humanity. "I'm 44 years old," she said. "It's taken me over 20 years, but I'm finally self-sufficient. My ex-husband is in prison, and I am blessed to be alive. I enjoy every minute being with my children and grandchild. We even have a trampoline and a small above-the-ground pool in the backyard. I have a great job. Life is good." Chavis wrote the following in an email on December 16, 2020 to Midland College employees who helped her build the house. "A formal dedication of the house was not done due to COVID. I signed on my house on November 30th and a ribbon cutting took place that same day. My appliances finally arrived, so I started to move in. I want to thank everyone for the support, encouraging words, and the prayers. I'm so blessed to have you all in my life." Employees at Midland College feel that they are the ones who are blessed to have Claudia in their lives. She's known throughout the campus as having a pleasant attitude. She greets everyone with a smile and always says, "Have a great day," when someone leaves her office. No one would ever suspect that the outgoing, cheerful secretary in the Human Resources office was once a victim of severe domestic abuse and lived in her car for over a year. Midland College, BEDC, holds First Florida Avenue Market of the Year. The Midland College Business and Economic Development Center held its Florida Avenue Market of the Season on August 21st at MC's Cogdell Learning Center. Shoppers supported local businesses offering hot food cooked on site, fresh produce, unique arts and crafts, accessories, hats, bags, jewelry, and more. "This open-air market is the perfect way to enjoy your Saturday morning," said Leticia Martinez, BEDC project assistant, before the event, We love connecting the community with these small businesses. There are always surprises for shoppers. The Florida Avenue Market gives entrepreneurs the opportunity to increase sales and allows us to better understand the needs of entrepreneurs in our community. The Florida Avenue Market will be held again on September 18th and October 16th from 8 a.m. to noon at the Cogdell Learning Center. If someone is interested in being a part of those future dates, call 684-4309 or email bedc@midland.edu.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the MRT for Wednesday. Doctors Correcting False Info Spread Online by Stuart Doreen. Dr. Zachary Castle has been practicing family medicine in Midland for around 4 years. He is worried about COVID-19's impact on the community. He sees what it does to medical resources, both at his office and at Midland Memorial Hospital. And when he had the opportunity to talk with the Reporter Telegram about the pandemic, one of the first things he wanted to call attention to wasn't what was happening in an emergency room or in his own offices, but online. One of the biggest problems is trying to correct false information being spread through social media, Castle said. He pointed to two alleged COVID solutions being talked about online more than in medical studies or inside doctors' offices: hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, the latter of which brought out the following response from Castle. I would never recommend going to a veterinarian supply store for your COVID needs, a reference that ivermectin, according to the FDA, is approved for use in animals for prevention of heartworm disease in some small animal species and for treatment of certain internal and external parasites in various animal species. Castle said he heard similar concerns from other physicians around Midland during a recent online call. They are hearing from patients about plans that are far-fetched and not consistent with good research. He said discussions also have taken place about budesonide, which the Mayo Clinic says is a corticosteroid or steroid, cortisone-like medicine, that works by preventing inflammation, swelling in the lungs, which makes the asthma attack less severe. There has been discussion during the pandemic about budesonide, which has been called the silver bullet by some doctors. Some proponents of the use of budesonide cite a study by the University of Oxford in England that states, inhaled budesonide is the first widely available, inexpensive drug found to shorten recovery times in COVID-19 patients aged over 50 who are treated at home and in other community settings, reports the UK's principal trial in 1,779 participants. Castle said there is reasonable evidence that budesonide is helping and that it can shorten duration of symptoms for 3 days. Castle also stated that the evidence he's seen has shown it has no impact on mortality or hospitalization rates. We try to use the best data to make the decision, said Castle, who again repeated that doctors are always looking at educational databases to learn latest things and then talking with other physicians about best practices. Castle said he would like to see more colleagues inside the medical community make their voice known. More doctors stand up for what we believe in, including on social media. Castle said that vaccines are important, as are masking, social distancing, and other guidelines to help people prevent people from getting COVID in the first place. Information is never a bad thing, Castle said. He also said practices, including vaccination, should not be a political thing, but what is best for people and the community. It has turned into a political statement, unfortunately, Castle said. Max Vaccination Clinics Resume September 14th by Caitlin Randall. Midland health officials announced Tuesday that they will resume mass vaccination clinics on September 14th. Here's more things to know from Tuesday morning's COVID-19 briefing. Midland Health will resume vaccination clinics at the West Campus on September 14th, according to CEO and President Russell Myers. Initial, second, and booster shots for those who qualify will be available. Currently, individuals who are immunocompromised are eligible for booster shots. Myers said, "They're anticipating those who received an initial dose 8 months ago will also be approved for booster shots by that date. Appointments are available at midlandhealth.org/schedule-my-vaccine. There were 231 total patients in the hospital on Tuesday, and 124 of those were COVID-19 patients. Of the COVID-19 patients, 22 are in critical care, and 26 patients are on ventilators. 87% of the COVID-19 patients are unvaccinated, which comes to 16 breakthrough infections. The age range for breakthrough cases is 51 to 89. 26 Midland Health employees are positive for the coronavirus and quarantining. There are 88 more employees who have been exposed but are continuing to work and self-monitoring. The overflow tent provided by the state was set up yesterday and was expected to become operational on Tuesday. It will be used for patients waiting in the emergency department. The sixth floor of Midland Memorial Hospital will be used as additional overflow space. There are 18 beds that are operational on that floor, and six more beds are planned to be opened Wednesday, for a total of 24 beds that can be used for any adult medical condition. Myers reported that there has been a challenge with discharging COVID-19 patients who are in the convalescing stage, meaning their infections are not active, but they have residual symptoms. He said several of these patients still require oxygen, but there is a limited supply available for at-home use. Officials asked that anyone with an oxygen concentrator, which allows home oxygen use, who is not using that machine, return it to their provider. Oxygen concentrators can be reused and given to convalescing patients so they can recover at home. Myers said they've had as many as 16 patients in the hospital at a time who are not able to be discharged because there's no oxygen concentrators available. About 28% of those being tested for COVID-19 by Midland Health are testing positive, Myers said. He said this is a slight improvement, but indicates that hospitalizations will continue to rise in the coming weeks. How do doctors choose their doctor? To your good health for Wednesday. Dear Dr. Roach, how do you choose your own doctors? The old advice to interview doctors can't be done within insurance constraints. I am an old Hispanic woman with low income. I have a PhD in cell biology from a widely respected university, but I am treated just as I witnessed my own mother treated. My words don't enter the doctor's ears. I get smiles, nods, and answers that do not apply. When I read my online notes, it is clear my concerns were not heard. I've had good care when I lived in an area with many immigrant doctors, but now I live in a state that doesn't attract immigrant doctors. What should I look for when scrolling through the lists of doctors my HMO offers? Dr. Roach writes, I asked my colleague, Dr. Susanna Morales, for her advice, and she wrote this, I am sorry that you have had such a frustrating experience with doctors. Finding the right doctor can definitely be challenging. It sounds like there may be a language barrier when you meet with doctors. It is your legal right to have a trained medical interpreter assist with your visit, usually by phone nowadays. Sometimes doctors may assume that they are communicating adequately, and that is just not the case. If language is an issue, I would consider routinely requesting a trained medical interpreter. You're right that not every locality has a diverse group of doctors, and Hispanic doctors are underrepresented in medicine. However, more and more, it is being recognized that all doctors need to learn how to provide care to patients from all racial and ethnic backgrounds in a compassionate and effective way. That is called cultural and linguistic competence.
This is the Dear Abby column. Star-crossed lovers remain worlds apart on Earth. Dear Abby, my soulmate Ted is marrying another woman. When we met 10 years ago, we fell madly in love. We had absolutely everything in common, but couldn't take our relationship to the next level because we were both married at the time. Ted's wife eventually left him for another man, but we still couldn't be together as I was still married. During that time, he met a woman named Shelley. I eventually got divorced because my husband left me for another woman, but I couldn't be with Ted because he was now with Shelley. We are perfect for each other in every way, but our paths could never come together. Ted has admitted they have nothing in common, and he's not in love with her, but he feels he has an obligation since she has been there for so long. I'm devastated at the thought of losing my soulmate again. I don't want him to marry her. Help. Signed, Such Bad Timing in Tennessee. Dear Timing, I am going to assume that Ted knows you are devastated at the thought of his marrying someone else. If you haven't told him, do it now. And when you do, point out that marriages entered into out of a feeling of obligation rather than love usually don't last. It's a sad truth. If he was being honest with you about his feelings for Shelley, she deserves better than what she'll be getting. Keep in mind that Ted has had time to end that romance since your divorce. My advice is to take a break. Clear your head before trying to find someone who is as available as you are, since Ted is taken. Dear Abby, my dad used to beat my mother badly. Back then it was don't tell. Well, I guess she got tired of it because she had him shot. I was 15 at the time. My brother and sister were 8 and 6, and they don't remember it well, but they were in my care until they were in their 20s. Now they are older, and I am treated like the black sheep. They act like I'm beneath them, and it hurts. My brother ended up in prison and was out for only 2 months before he put his hands on me. Am I petty for having nothing to do with them? My mom was in prison for a long time and died 2 years after she was released. What am I supposed to do? Any advice would be appreciated. Signed, Drifting in the East. Dear Drifting, abusers have sometimes been victims themselves, or they grew up witnessing abuse, which is why they think it is normal behavior. Please accept that you can't fix what's wrong with your relatives, the younger ones included. Although you have been through much trauma at an early age, it is within your power to heal. Counseling can help you do that. It is available in most communities through the Department of Mental Health. Dear Abby, I find the phrase, shut up, to be hostile, aggressive, and at times demoralizing. Are there any situations where it is okay to say it? Signed, Polite in California. Dear Polite, although the phrase shut up may be jarring to hear, it has become part of the vernacular and its meaning has changed over the years. It isn't always intended to mean be quiet. It is sometimes used lightheartedly to express surprise. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.